Fuck you! Australia! Germany!
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Happy Labor Day, y'all. It is 26 minutes past the hour. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live, even when I show up 26 minutes late. And, well, don't blame me. Sometimes, despite the best of intentions, the computer doesn't... The computer wanted Labor Day off. No kidding. I've been sitting, you know, it's rather an older thing, and I've been sitting here waiting for it to finish a reboot and settle down and everything, because it decided to take the evening off at about 5 minutes until six in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone, and being old, cranky, and 32-bit, and running Windows 10, it just now decided that it was going to cooperate. So, you know, I'm here, it's here, and some of you are here. This is live programming. It is the fifth day of September 2016, and it is Labor Day, and, well, you know, I didn't, on Friday, that if we had reached and finished our fundraising goal, that I'd take the day off. Well, we didn't, so here I am. And that's okay. I feel kind of silly and dueless on days when I don't crawl in here behind the microphone, especially when there's stuff on my mind and stuff that begs attention. Mm-hmm. And there's plenty of that. I had a note from Sylvia saying, I know you need a day off, but I was hoping you'd be on. I'm under the weather, and it would have been a pure palliative for me. Enjoy your holiday. Well, get well soon, Sylvia. I'm not gone. I'm here. It's just in the middle of kicking machines and stuff. I don't really get that. Can't answer a lot of, you know, emails. No, we didn't finish fundraising last week. We've got about, we'll call it $300 to go. And assuming that this is going out live, that's where we are. And that's the last I'm going to say about it. And we'll just see where we are tomorrow evening. But that's where we are. So, it is, in fact, Labor Day, and I knew that I wanted to be on the air early today, just when I started thinking about Labor Day. And I posted a little essay over on Facebook. It's there if you want to read it. I'm basically going to go through the essence of it right now. And that is that I would like to see Labor Day treated with far more respect. Because this day is not a 10, is not attended by the solemnity it deserves. Labor Day is the day when proper fashionable ladies can no longer wear white. Labor Day is the day for the big giant tent blowout end of summer car sale down to Freddy's Ford. Labor Day is, like any other day of the year, a day of capitalist excess. It's time for the big Christmas sale, the big Easter sale, the big Valentine's Day sale. It's time for the big 4th of July blowout. It's time for the end of summer Labor Day bash. Get a free fill-up with a car wash, or get a free car wash with a fill-up. You get the idea. But it's not what the holiday's about. Oh boy, Bob's going to be a bummer. It's not what the holiday's about. It is every bit as much about remembering why we have Labor Day. Remembering that once upon a time, there were 84-hour work weeks. Once upon a time, there were 8 and 9-year-olds who went into the mines so that capitalist millionaires and billionaires could have a little more lobster at breakfast. Could have one more floor on their palatial mansions. Once upon a time, that was the reality, and with the rise of the so-called gig economy, it looks like where we're headed back to. I took my daughter to work today. She works now. She's hoping to get into college, but like so many working class children of American parents, hoping to get into college is all she's got. So I took her to work today over at that bastion of brutal modern American capitalism. You know the name of the retail chain. And everything was open. That behemoth, that asterisk, that golden asterisk blue basilisk was open. The slave labor nail joint was open. GameStop was open. Gino's Pizza and Spaghetti House was open. All the cell phone stores were open. Lowe's was open. CVS Pharmacy was open. Sheets convenience store was open. Bojangles, Kentucky Fried Chicken, Taco Hell, Long John Silverfish were open. Kroger, open. Everything was open. The only thing that was closed today was a little Chinese buffet restaurant called OK Chinese Buffet. They're humble there. It's not great Chinese buffet. It's not stupendous Chinese buffet. It's just the okay Chinese buffet. And you know what? It's okay. It's not great. It's not terrible. It's just okay. But that place is staffed entirely by immigrants to the United States. And it, by God, was closed. Well, that's interesting. Labor Man in the chat room, and if you'd like to be in the chat room, run on by. Pick click on chat room at headonradionetwork.com. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password. Jump into the conversation. Labor Man just pointed out that the Hot Wok was closed in Moriarty, out in New Mexico. Huh. Maybe they have an appreciation for what the day means that we don't. Because we don't. You know how much my extended family means to me. There's all kinds of relations under the dirt within a mile of me. Probably somewhere approaching 5 or 6 or 7 generations worth. And I got to thinking about Granddad. You know, he worked in coal at a time when he didn't even get paid in American money for the labor that he did. At a time when the company told him they didn't just own his hours on the clock, they owned him and whatever he did off the clock. So in essence, whatever they were paying him in the 8, 10, 12 hours that he was in the hole, they were actually diminishing his salary by a factor of 2 or 3 because they owned his behavior off the clock too. If a handful of fellas from the mine were seen gabbing together, their little confab could be broken up by thugs under the guise of illegal union activities, illegal organizing, and that extended to Sunday dinner. My father told me that story all the years of my childhood as I grew up. About how one family couldn't invite members of another family over to Sunday dinner, as if they had enough to feed two, let alone their own family, because the company would deem that to be union organizing. And of course, union organizing, well, Bolshevism. And we're returning to that era. Make no mistake. We are. And we'll be back to it in full force before we even know it. Labor laws are scarcely enforced. Taft-Hartley took two generations ago, Taft-Hartley took the teeth out of the National Labor Relations Act. And union membership continues to diminish. I think there are multiple reasons for that. Union leadership is a part of it. But so too are the laws that make it harder to join unions. But Labor Day should be a day of tremendous solemnity. It isn't. But it should be. I got to thinking about what you know, if I had some means of enforcing it, what Labor Day would be. You know who would mark Labor Day with the greatest solemnity? The rich. Every Labor Day, the scions of wealthy families at places like Harvard, Yale, Brown, Princeton, Penn would spend Labor Day walking around with a dollar sign drawn in ashes on their foreheads. Because, see, as people, I use this merely as an example, not as a comparison. It's not a comparison. But as researchers and investigators of the Holocaust found, the wealth that was stolen in the Holocaust echoes down the decades and continues to support wealthy people. Well, that is doubly, trebly, or quadruply so where labor is concerned. The lives lost and the blood shed in places like Ludlow, Haymarket, the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory, Blair Mountain, Gawley Mountain, continues to enrich the elite wealth class in this country. And so I guarantee you that somewhere at Harvard, at Yale, at Princeton, at Penn, at Brown, at Dartmouth, and yes, at Stanford, and at the University of Virginia, the whole Dominion, and probably every institution of higher learning in this country, to one degree or another, labor's working people's sacrifices continue to enable the rich. And so, you know, financial aid departments, university admissions departments, they know how much daddy makes. A little email reminder could go out. Come by the student union today, Barrington Throckmorton Millhouse the Fourth, and get your little smudge of ashes on your forehead for Labor Day in the shape of a dollar sign. Every millionaire in this country should have to fast on Labor Day from midnight to midnight. And they should do so cheerfully, joyfully. Gratefully. For the fact that, because you see, there are so few of them and so many of us, they live at our sufferance. They should fast on Labor Day in gratitude for the blood we've shed and the lives we've sacrificed so they can have a better mansion, a longer yacht, a deeper pocket. They should go to church, synagogue, mosque, and thank whatever deity they prefer for the fact that they are allowed to live. But we don't. We don't. No, we don't. But we should. Because so much has been sacrificed. So much. So much. And to take a moment, this whole thing sort of coalesced around a story that I've been hoping to bring to the table for a couple of days now. I saw it in the New York Times. When we talk about Labor Day, do you know who should be the most honored guests at any Labor Day rally or observation? The working class has suffered mightily, but no working class, no laborer has suffered more so than the African-American community. You might recall that during the Democratic National Convention, Michelle Obama engendered a full-on butt-hurt, crocodile-tear-weeping, blue-purple polka-dotted hissy fit featuring kittens with crocheted tails when she said that every day she wakes up in a house built by slaves. Oh, Jesus! That drove the right wing right up and out of its nasty little poisonous tree. And we're talking, what, 265 years of free labor. 265 years of uncompensated labor. But of all the things that aren't mentioned on Labor Day, that's probably less mentioned than any other thing. The trails that were blazed by Native Americans were made into roads by slave labor. I noticed that the college football season opened for the universities of Georgia and North Carolina this past Saturday. They are the two oldest state universities in the country, and they argue with each other periodically over which one is the oldest. You know what there's no argument about? The fact that every stone of the first buildings laid down, every foundation dug, was dug by slaves. Capitol buildings, state houses. It was built before 1865. It was built by slaves. The United States Capitol, built by slaves. The great houses of the South, built by slaves. An entire nation whose essential foundation was laid on stolen labor. And that scarcely gets a mention on Labor Day. I wonder if anybody else, well, I mean, if whoever else doing progressive radio is working today, I wonder if anybody else will mention that. I don't have anything to bet with, but if I were a betting man, I'd bet the answer is no. No. The article I found in the New York Times a couple of days back has to deal with an announcement recently made by Georgetown University, which is run by the Jesuit order of the Roman Catholic Church. It has to do with something that Georgetown University did back in 1838 when it was having a hard time scraping up the necessary cash to keep the joint open. In 1838, the Jesuit priests, the servants of Almighty God and recipients of the grace of Christ Jesus, whose motto is everything to the greater glory of God, Ad Majorem Dei Gloriae, AMDG, decided that the glory of God would be more greatly magnified by selling off some slaves. And they did. On a day in 1838, the Jesuits at Georgetown University sold off 272 human beings. They broke families up. They sent children 1,000 miles away to the young state of Louisiana. They sent men and women and children. One of the sold slaves being a 2-month-old baby in her mother's arms. A young man just entering his teenage years, 13 years old, sold and put aboard ship at a wharf in Maryland. Because, you see, the Jesuits owned entire plantations that were made going concerns by human chattel. So the big news in the New York Times is that the Jesuits have navel-gazed and prayed and fasted, or whatever it is that Jesuits do. And, I don't know, maybe they've worn barbed wire, beaten themselves with horsehair flails. I don't know. Too weird for me. But they've decided it's time to make things right. And you know, good on them. Georgetown exists today because of an amount of money equal in today's cash to about $2.2 million. So Georgetown is going to rename a couple of buildings that were named for the early heads of the university. They're going to rename it for two people whose lives they had already destroyed in slavery, but made even worse by selling them into the living hell of the Deep South. I'm sorry, not $2.2, $3.3 million. And they're going to open up an institute for the study of slavery at Georgetown and in the Washington area. Adam Rothman is a historian at Georgetown. He said, the university itself owes its existence to this history. Yes, it does. A wealthy alumnus of Georgetown, by the name of Richard J. Cellini, CEO of a tech company, provided the money with which to do a historical research project to find the descendants of the slaves upon whose backs Georgetown University rode. And they have found some of them because the Jesuits kept meticulous records. And a picture has slowly come together, as the New York Times notes, of an insular world dominated by priests who required their slaves to attend Mass for the sake of their salvation, but also whipped and sold some of them. The records describe runaways, harsh plantation conditions, and the anguish voiced by some Jesuits over their participation in a system of forced servitude. Dr. Rothman called it a microcosm of the whole history of American slavery. So, Georgetown will acknowledge the evil that it did. The evil of people being dragged off by force to a ship called the Catherine Jackson. Extended families completely shattered. An aunt and her daughters shipped off to one plantation. Her husband and his wife and children sent to another, never to see the others again. All to the greater glory of God. As the Times notes, the young university, the college, I guess, was pretty much in the slave business. They'd been buying and selling slaves as early as the 1780s. So now, there will be an Institute for the Study of Slavery, some sort of monument erected on the grounds of Georgetown University. A public mea culpa, mea culpa, mea maxima culpa. But have you noticed what I have not mentioned? A Georgetown University education. Now, part of the mea culpa is the fact that Georgetown says that it will reach out to the descendants of the slaves in whom they trafficked and on whose blood and bones they profited. And they will offer those descendants a degree of preferential treatment in applying for admission to the much heralded, much vaunted, distinguished Georgetown University. You know what they ain't offering? Free tuition, free room and board. They got plenty of free labor. They never paid a godforsaken dime of it. But no. I mean, mea culpas extend only so far. And it does not extend as far as free tuition for the descendants of those victims of human trafficking. Whoa! No. That would smell a little too much like reparations. And we can't have any of that. But the stolen labor of one Jesuit college is truly the tip of an iceberg floating above the waterline that barely even hints at the massive crime against humanity that lurks below. The University of Virginia was, of course, tied up in the slave trade. Harvard was tied up in the slave trade. Columbia University, tied up in the slave trade. Brown University, tied up in the slave trade. William and Mary, tied up in the slave trade. Everything, every institution of this country was befouled by the evil of that centuries-long practice. We can't be giving out any free tuition. I mean, that'd be like socialism or communism or something. I mean, you start letting them go to school for free, the next thing you know, rumpf! Nicely said in the chat room, Jug of Punch. Mea culpa, mea culpa, mea maxima. Fuck you! And that's a fitting topic, a fitting subject for Labor Day. Because as grim and gruesome as the 19th century history of working in this country is, again, it's only the tip of a humongous iceberg of evil, oppression, and exploitation. The sooty-faced little children whose photographs you can see online at coal mines in Pennsylvania, Kentucky, West Virginia. Sad and real. And not outside reach. My own beloved wife's father, born in 1915, went into the coal mines as a child in West Virginia. Two generations back. Not five or ten. Two. And so I ask the question, and I ask it earnestly and in tremendous sincerity. I know what it feels like to contemplate that two generations back. What in God's name must it feel like to contemplate that one generation, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10 generations? Because just with me and two or three generations and all the white privilege with which I am clothed and bathed, and the anguish and the anger that I feel, my God! What must it be to have that multiplied exponentially by tens and tens upon tens? I cannot, nor will I even attempt to express that. You know, goddamn, There's a paragraph in this New York Times story that says, now with racial protests roiling college campuses. Racial protests? That's what the New York Times reporter comes up with? Racial protests? Let's try this with a little bit more humanity, shall we? Now, with cries for justice roiling college campuses, the New York Times, the most professional of practitioners of the art of word knowing, can't even get it right. And by God, if the New York Times can't get it right, I guess it's a mite much for us to expect a political party to. Yeah. Back on the 31st day of August, over at Huffington Post, Julia Craven, a reporter there, published an article headline, leaked 2015 memo told Dems don't offer support for Black Lives Matter policy positions. It is a leaked memo, hacked and released by Guccifer 2.0, a memo authored by a functionary, a creature, over at the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, the organization charged with electing Democrats to the House of Representatives. It was written in November 2015. It reads in part, presidential candidates have struggled to respond to tactics of the Black Lives Matter movement. While there has been little engagement with House candidates and campaign staff should be prepared. This document should not be emailed or handed to anyone outside of the building. Please only give campaign staff these best practices in meetings or over the phone. The memo goes on to describe Black Lives Matter as a radical movement. The purpose of that radical movement being, according to the memo, to end anti-black racism. And proceeds to offer suggestions to candidates on how to handle it. If approached by BLM activists, campaign staff should offer to meet with local activists. Invited BLM attendees should be limited. Please aim for personal or small group meetings. Listen to their concerns. Don't offer support for concrete policy provisions. Don't offer support. You pat them on the head and give them a laurel and hearty handshake and send them on their way in small groups. How did Nancy Pelosi, the head of the Democratic Caucus in the House of Representatives, respond? She said, this attempt by Russia to influence our election has no place in our democracy. Our democracy. Oh, yeah, it's still a knee slapper, that phrase. In addition, Leader Pelosi does not have a personal computer at the DCCC, so no hacked, dumped, or doctored documents can be attributed to her computer.
in regard to the memo about Black Lives Matter. Leader Pelosi does not support the content or attitude of this memo. On many occasions, Leader Pelosi has publicly supported the ideals embraced by the Black Lives Matter movement and continues to do so.
The meeting, the memo itself says, tactics, meet with local activists. If approached by BLM activists, campaign staff should offer to meet with local activists. Invited BLM attendees should be limited. Please aim for personal or small group meetings. Listen to their concerns. Don't offer support for concrete policy positions. Frontline district staff should meet with activists. Provide a point person. Always provide a campaign contact person for BLM activists. It is important to let activists know the campaign wants to engage in an open dialogue. You know, just as long as none of the candidates are, you know, offering to support any concrete policy positions. Be a partner and lead from behind. BLM needs partners to achieve their agenda, and they want to be a part of the conversation. However, BLM activists don't want their movement co-opted by the Democrat Party. My God, this is a Democratic staffer who uses Democrat Party. Dear God. Message. Do not say all lives matter nor mention black on black crime. Okay, good piece of advice. And some of the advice in it is good. But, oh, my God. Poor old Democratic Party just can't get off its own. You ever seen a donkey step on its own? It's not a happy sound. No. Now, from there, elsewhere. And by elsewhere, I mean North Dakota. Where, over the weekend, North Dakota became the new Birmingham. And hired thugs for the pipeline company became the new, and the pipeline company itself became the new Bull Connor. The Standing Rock Sioux tribe are not going away, and they are gathering and gaining allies every day. Meanwhile, the company continues to slash away at the earth, eliminating irreplaceable historic markers, graves, monuments, stone cairns and the like, in pursuit of, you know, more money. Jesus. And just as the Birmingham police did more than 50 years ago, the hired thugs, with the approval of the pipeline company, have turned to the use of attack dogs. That's right. This weekend in North Dakota at the No Dakota Access Pipeline, hashtag No DAPL, continuing protests, private security, otherwise known as thugs, we know about them here in Appalachia. Anybody with any sort of a labor history knows about company thugs. And what they'll do and what they're capable of. At one point in time, they ran an armored train through a coal camp on Paint Creek in West Virginia during the Paint Creek Mine Wars and machine gunned a tent village of striking miners. Company thugs were the ones who opened fire at Ludlow, Colorado. And on and on. At one point in time, we thought that company thugs had been outlawed. But no. They are still very much with us. They are nameless. We have no idea who these people are. It would be nice if we could know. But we don't. Nameless hired thugs with attack dogs and pepper spray. Man, don't you know Bull Connor would have loved him some pepper spray? Hoo-wee! Don't you know the Alabama state troopers and National Guard would have loved them some pepper spray on the Edmund Pettus Bridge? Mercy! That would have rendered the skull cracking even more fun because people would have been more helpless. But yeah, they turned their dogs loose on peaceful protesters in North Dakota over the weekend. Women and children were attacked. A horse was attacked by one of the attacked dogs. There's a photo to be seen. You can find it on my Facebook page of a snarling, weaponized, four-legged animal with its mouth painted in human blood. And nothing is being done by law enforcement. You know, blue lives matter, but Indian lives don't. Now I'm all awash in history 24/7. It feels like the present is just the transition for me. It feels like the present is just a transitory, fleeting moment between the past and the future. And so when I saw the video footage of the snarling, maddened, weaponized animals. And God, is it, you know, can you ever untrain an attack dog from being an attack dog? Can you ever de-weaponize one of these dogs? I don't know. But when I saw the video, I remembered the arrival of Cortez in Mexico. In addition to bringing horses to the New World for the first time, he brought dogs and was not shy, Cortez was not, about ordering them released onto an innocent population that had never seen such an animal. Wolves, yeah. Coyote, yeah. Dogs like this, trained specifically to maim, to maul, and to kill, no. Wolves, they understood in some cosmologies as brothers, alongside bears, living the lives that they had to live on Earth. Wolves will kill, but they do not kill for sport or on the order of any human. These were different. And the Spanish staghounds literally tore human beings limb from limb. And so, on Saturday, in North Dakota, everything old was new again. You know, every so often, Anonymous will put out one of those videos of the guy in the Guy Fawkes mask saying, "We are Anonymous. We do not forgive. We do not forget." We need to know, people need to know, the identity of those vicious humans. Those weaponized humans with their weaponized animals. So that justice may be sought. The North Dakota State Police hovered over the entire event, the entire melee, in a helicopter. And did absolutely nothing. The pipeline company still does not have the requisite easement permits from the Army Corps of Engineers to do the work that they've already that they're already having done. And see, the way that's neat, the way that works within the law, because if the Standing Rock people go and say, "Hey, they didn't even have the permits," the court gets to say, "Yeah, but, you know, the harm's already done, so it can't be undone, so let it continue." They've bulldozed over the places where the bones of 10 millennia of human beings have been interred. And they are stealing this land no less than my ancestors stole the land upon which they squatted and were willing to commit murder to keep. And by the way, just for the record, I didn't see a brown, a black, or a so-called red face among any of the attackers. Those were all white folks. I don't know about the makeup of the board of directors or the executive class of First Energy Partners. Is that the name of them? But I'm willing to bet there's not more than one or two that aren't lily white. Second verse, 15th verse, same as the first. And so that continues. And I continue to ask the question in relation to it, for what? For what are we transshipping by pipeline this Bakken crude filth from a far corner of North Dakota down to Illinois? For what are we putting at hazard the water of life of millions of human beings. For what?
Well, for America's energy independence. Bullshit.
How much oil? How many barrels of oil are in the ground in the Bakken Shale? How many days would the Bakken Shale, not weeks, not months, not years, damned well not decades, how many days or weeks would the Bakken Shale provide fuel to the United States of America? Would the Bakken Shale provide energy to the United States of America? Hell no! That's what the damn pipeline's for. It goes to a refinery, it gets off the refinery, and it goes somewhere else. Because oil is a globally traded commodity. No, Anatole, the Bakken is not from Canada. The Bakken is from North Dakota in the Bakken fields. You're thinking of the tar sands filth. This is a different animal. You get the Bakken Shale by fracking for it, just like you frack for natural gas. Not you, but yeah, you know. If they are permitted to build this pipeline, it will not lower the price of gasoline at the pump a damn penny. Ha! Well, there's the first energy executive committee. John Chambers, Lily White, Jim Davidson, Lily White, Trent Baim, Lily White, Robert Fitzmartin, Lily White, Nicholas Johnson, Lily White, Mark Lamas, Lily White, Brian Lopushinsky, Lily White, and Hugh Sanderson, Lily White. You damn bet. Oh, look. They've over there. Thank you, Sparky, who has folded space to become Man Cave this evening, by the way. They have values, and they put up a website about their values, or a web page. First Energy is dedicated to fostering energy sector development through unparalleled delivery of opportunity, service, and industry knowledge. The core values defined by the founders in 1993 continue today and reflect the principles driving our business. Socially conscious and community-focused, philanthropy is ingrained in our firm's culture. We're committed to making a difference in the communities where we work and live with attack dogs. This seems to fit, this story seems to fit with Labor Day, too. Because the works and roads and days of the Standing Rock people and of every human being near which this filthy, godforsaken pipeline passes are held to be of no value whatsoever. But First Energy, if this is the outfit I'm thinking it is, says, honesty and integrity have always been pillars to our client relationships and provide the foundation that supports all our decisions and recommendations. Eat me. And of course, A couple of interesting facts coming out of the Bakken the no DAPL protest. Interestingly, a number of people noted that even as even as the violence was being ramped up by the thugs, suddenly cell service dropped to almost nil. And it wasn't because everybody decided to suddenly start playing Pokemongo. It was probably because the police flipped the switch to make sure that there might be some cover of darkness. Cyber darkness. For the evil that they knew was about to be practiced against peaceful protesters. Amy Goodman made it out there. And she wasn't able to send anything live because, again, the internet went to hell. But she provided valuable documentation of what was going on. You know who wasn't there? CBS News. You know who wasn't there? Chicken Noodle News. You know who wasn't there? Fox. MSNBC, NBC. Neither George Snuffleupagus nor any of his compadres were there. Nope. Because the story is being, and I would say deliberately, under, if not unreported. So that means it falls to you and me. Us, we. The for-profit media have decided not to cover this because, after all, it would probably annoy some multi-million dollar advertiser. Granted, the Wall Street Journal had an article about it, but it was slanted entirely in favor of the poor put-upon pipeline company. And, of course, noting the desperate violence of the heathen savages. So that means if you're on social media, the only way to grow awareness of the manifest injustices being practiced in North Dakota is for you to be the media, for me to be the media, for we together to be the media. And to share this stuff, and I've been doing it to the best of my abilities over on my Facebook page. Pick it up and pass it forward. Make it impossible to ignore. It's the only chance. Because just as is the case with every form of extreme extraction, and this pipeline is a manifestation of that, the companies doing it prefer to do it under cover of relative darkness. I remember when mountaintop removal was something that was always tucked away. They didn't let it come out to the roads because they didn't want anybody seeing it. It's still hard to see, except for dedicated operations organizations like South Wings, which has a group of volunteer pilots who will fly journalists and others over these sites and let them see with their own eyes the horrors being perpetrated. Same thing with fracking. And with this. Because the trick with extreme energy extraction is to keep people from knowing the lengths that have to be gone to in order to get the stuff. Lest people have an outbreak of conscience. Meanwhile, a note, the subject line, wages of slavery. The dollar value of lives stolen in the monumental crime of slavery is beyond calculation and shall not be repaid, it would appear. Consider, William Faulkner spent an entire lifetime just trying to conceive of such a horror. Regards, Steve in China. And that's true. He did. One of the fundamental tenets of the law is that the law, where harms like that are concerned, is unable to restore what was lost, but can at least attempt some sort of financial recompense. But where slavery is concerned, that goes out the window. The law is full of noble-sounding maxims, like equity will not permit a harm without a remedy. But that all goes out the door on one of the most massive crimes ever committed. It's all of a piece, isn't it? On this Labor Day. And I'd like to take a moment to suggest a new holiday. A new holiday that will encompass or cast a little bit wider net. We have Mother's Day, Father's Day, Grandparents' Day. We have Labor Day. Independence Day. We have Thanksgiving. We have Christmas, Hanukkah, Ramadan. We have Halloween, Valentine's Day, Groundhog Day. Goddamn groundhog gets a day. I suggest a new holiday. Innocence Day. Innocence Day. That would be a national holiday reserved. You know, we have Memorial Day, in which we remember military people who died in war. But we do not have a day to remember the innocent who are sacrificed and have been and have long been the biggest source of sacrificial victims, be it war or capitalism. And really, they're kind of the same thing in the modern era, aren't they? Innocence Day. A day to remember the loss of innocent life, the assaults on innocent people. A day to remember people poisoned downwind and downstream from capitalism, from religion,
from politics, from ideology.
When could we put that? Let's see. You get St. Patrick's Day in March, but that's pretty much a Catholic thing. Easter can be March or April. You get Memorial Day at the end of May. Yeah, somewhere March or April, as spring is coming to the land, Innocence Day. And it would be a step toward something resembling truth and reconciliation. And an attempt, and you don't even have to you don't have to have a deity for any of this. An attempt at atonement and reflection. Okay, I'll take that suggestion. Randy in PA says, how about in August when it's 100 degrees outside, a time for self-reflection? August would work. We don't have any holidays in August. From 4th of July to August the 31st, the first weekend in September, we're holiday poor. Breaking news, courtesy of Larry. Just in, conservative icon Phyllis Schlafly, dead at 92. Has anybody checked in on Tom Hartman? I'm sure he'll be shattered. Given the Sturm und Drang in her organization over her endorsement of T-Rump, it might be valuable to try to find out if she jumped or was pushed. Oh well. She had a nice run. She had a nasty run, but you know, you get the idea. 92 years old, you don't say she was cut off in her prime. Goodbye, Phil. Probably pretty warm where you're headed. Anatole tells me Hartman didn't have a show today. Well, now we know why. He's in mourning. National treasure, Phyllis Schlafly. Oh, God bless you, Carol Baker. No, it just came from Carol. America's treasure is dead. Release the flying monkeys. Oh, ask not for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for Phyllis Schlafly. Can we toll it a little bit? Can we get it? Wait. I got a bell. You'll smoke a turd in hell for that one, Bob Kincaid. Millions of American women can thank Phyllis Schlafly for the fact that equal rights for women is not enshrined in the Constitution of the United States. Mm-hmm. All right. Damn, where does the time go? It's 7:45. And even though it's Labor Day, This is still Conversation Radio. Oh, by the way, Jim has an email. Reparations? What about the Native Americans whose property was taken from them by settlers? Could you opine on this malfeasance of morality and expropriation of property, please? I think I just did, Jim. What else? Oh, God. The kerfuffle-pernick won't go away. Now, you can't get the devil to say anything about the Dakota Access Pipeline and the manifest injustice that it is. And Barack Obama has been as silent on as a graven image on the topic. But, uh-oh. According to Reuters, today, President not sure chimed in on the Kaepernick kerfuffle . He was in China after a G20 meeting taking questions. And he said, I think there are a lot of ways you can do it as a general matter when it comes to the flag and the national anthem and the meaning that that holds for our men and women in uniform and those who fought for us. That's a tough thing for them to get past to then hear what his deeper concerns are. Young people are trying to think through how they can be part of our democratic process. And people who are just sitting on the sidelines and not paying attention at all. Sometimes it's messy, but it's the way democracy works. Ah, Jesus. And then the Twitterverse caught fire. I'd a damn sight rather heard Barack Obama chime in on the Dakota Access Pipeline, but he ain't gonna. Because, for starters, the for-profit media are not going to ask him about it. Ask me no questions. I'll tell you no lies. But it was a handy topic to raise, you know, in China. It was, I suppose, a subtle way to get in a human rights dig at the Chinese. One tweeter said, Obama throwing shade at China using Colin Kaepernick. That's my president. That's exactly what that was. And, you know, we'll needle the Chinese about their human rights record a little bit here and there, but we will goddamn sure not needle too hard, because we like all that crap that comes from over there. On Friday, I mentioned the exploding Samsung Galaxy Note 7. Well, it turns out that while Samsung has recalled two and a half million sets, everyone that it's sold, it is doing so without going through the Consumer Product Safety Commission, because that would impose certain duties and obligations on Samsung, and it would prevent any of the phones from being sold at all. As it is, you can still, in some places, go and buy a Samsung Galaxy Note 7, and it might or might not explode on the charger. Oopsie. It's a battery problem. Samsung says that it has, who is a Korean company, but does a tremendous amount of business in China, where people work 12-hour shifts and go to sleep in dormitories with suicide nets outside them. And interestingly, of all of the of all of the units they produced, 70% of the batteries were produced by a captive corporation owned by Samsung. That would be Samsung SDI. They provided 70% of the batteries. The other 30% of the batteries were provided to Samsung by Amperex Technology Limited and made in China. Want to bet which ones have the exploding batteries? Of course, the Apple fanboys and fangirls are eagerly awaiting the arrival of what is being referred to as, but not officially named yet, the iPhone 7 at a great big special super duper double secret probation event in which the device will be unveiled on Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And every one of those handsets will be chock-a-block in human oppression and, well, not a hell of a lot of regard for labor rights. So we might needle a little bit, but we're not going to needle a lot. Because money. Because millionaires and billionaires, even though there are far fewer of them, are not nearly as important, or are far more important, I should say, are far more important than, you know, a bunch of working stiffs who are one generation from removed from being peasant farmers in the first place, right? So we got that. Pretty good bit of stuff to ponder. I mean, we've got Labor Day in the United States. And, you know, being a communist worker's paradise. Every day is Labor Day in China. Communist. Huh, that's interesting. Randy just emailed and said, rumor has it the iPhone 7 announcement at Apple's September event has been canceled. An update to the mid-215 Retina MacBook Pro top-of-the-line laptop probably will be announced. Hadn't heard that. Maybe they're worried about their batteries, too. Maybe the test units are blowing up on the launch pad. I mean, Charger. So it's 6 minutes before the hour. And, well, I said I wouldn't mention it, but I have to give credit where credit is due. We are down to $320 to go in fundraising. Thank you to Miss Karen and Steve and Cletus. Cletus is a good puppy. Thank you very kindly. Oh, yeah, because, you know, we kind of have to. Let's check in and let's check in on the right wing hissy over Colin Kaepernick, because you know it's if nothing else, I guess it provides us a little bit of fun to watch how these freaks lose their minds. Labor man in the chat room. But Bob, I thought the ISIS was making those exploding phones. Well, yeah, they probably are. I mean, capitalism doesn't care. All right, we'll do it this way. Oh, by the way, Colin Kaepernick jersey sales have skyrocketed since he began his protest. Good. That kind of says something, doesn't it? Yeah, here we go. Tom Bagioni over at Raw Story. Internet racists melt down after resentful mulatto Obama defends Kaepernick's right to protest. Of course he would side with an anti-American mulatto. Huge surprise that our resentful mulatto president supports an anti-American gesture. Of course Obama would defend him. Both came from single white mothers after their, that word, fathers left them. Cop-hating, pandering, bad parent Obama sides with Kaepernick. Oh, the shock. His opinion is worth that of CNN. Oh, that's low. Hillary and Obama create violence against police by pushing false narratives with Dem groups, BLM, and Black Panthers.
Nothing keeps blacks from achieving in the USA now but a victim mindset. Injustice, racism are used when they have failed themselves.
Obama hates America, the police, and white people. Why should his stance on this be any different? You know, for sake. It's been a tough trip to Asia for President Obama. There was a kerfuffle on the tarmac with Chinese staff. They tried to keep him separate from his retinue and from the White House press corps. And when White House staffers objected, a functionary screamed, "This is our country! This is our airport!" Oh, goody. But this is a little something. On his way home, President Obama was supposed to stop in the Philippines for a first meeting with President Rodrigo Duterte. Duterte is the Donald Trump of the Philippines. But that meeting was canceled because earlier today, Duterte, subject to translation, of course, called Barack Obama the son of a whore. He really is the Donald Trump of the Philippines, and he won going away, by the way. So they sort of rerouted him, and now he's going to go to South Korea to talk with President Park Geun-hye. Mm-hmm. They told President Obama about it in Hangzhou, China, at the G20 meeting. Mm-hmm. Reuters describing Duterte's remarks as those of a plain-spoken populist known for his colorful remarks. That's what it is. Interestingly, as a template, Duterte's campaign was run on themes that sound like a Trump rally. Among other things, Barack Obama was supposed to raise human rights in the Philippines, too. And Duterte said he'd better not. He said it would be rude for Barack Obama to raise extrajudicial killings and human rights abuses. And said if he does, I'll call him a son of a whore or a son of a bitch. Plenty will be killed until the last drug pusher is out of the streets. Until the last manufacturer is killed, we will continue. But Barack Obama's in good company. Duterte also called him a son of a whore. Oh, well. Hey, thanks very kindly. Thanks very kindly, Rusty. Fundraising goal now down to $220. Thank you, Rusty. I will tell Boss Man Wayne to leave the spider-proof gloves in the big red truck. And speaking of Boss Man Wayne, I don't know how many of you noticed on my Facebook page, but yesterday was Boss Man Wayne's birthday. How did Boss Man Wayne celebrate his birthday? Boss Man Wayne celebrated his birthday like he celebrates every day, by getting out and working for the betterment of the lives of working people. He's doing everything he can to try to save the state of West Virginia from the ongoing nightmare that is our teabagger legislature. Mm-hmm. Happy birthday. Happy birthday, Boss Man Wayne. He will be tickled pink to see your note in the mail, Rusty. Like I said a little bit ago, this is Conversation Radio. I was going to take a break, but I didn't. This is Conversation Radio. This is the horn. If you want to engage in conversation, you are more than welcome. You know the numbers, 304-663-4676 is the stress line, 304-663-4676. It'll get you right through to the program, 304-663-HORN. 304-574-8178 is the other number. And Skype to Skype from anywhere on Earth, well, Bob Kincaid Horn. It is quite easy that way. Oh, never mind the break. Let's just keep the conversation going. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, is this Bob?
It is Bob.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know. I think you've done more today to celebrate Labor Day than anybody else in the whole country.
Well, thank you.
Pardon me?
I said thank you.
You know, it's one thing that I don't think people, you were talking about the people in, you know, I guess it was North Dakota about the pipeline.
Yeah.
The best I remember aren't, whenever they create a reservation for American Indians, isn't that land placed in trust?
Oh, as long as grass grows and wind blows.
So the people that really, they don't have any right over their own land.
Well, I mean, it's theirs in perpetuity. It is theirs to do with as they see fit. But this, now, so, I mean, bear in mind that, let's be fair, the Dakota Access Pipeline is not going through, to the best of my understanding, is not going through the Standing Rock Tribe's land. It is going near it. But it is going over land that contains burials, monuments, sacred stuff, and has the ability to negatively impact, if it should leak, onto their land. So that's, you know, that's the nature of the dispute.
Yeah. I don't know. I think basically the people that were here whenever the white man came, I think they've really gotten the royal shaft generation after generation, and people just don't understand what's going on.
Well, there's those that don't understand, there's those that don't know, and there's those that don't care. The don't care bunch are the people who worship at the blood-soaked altar of the hydrocarbon and fossil fuel industry.
Right.
The don't knows are the vast majority of American people.
Yeah.
The don't understands, that's a tiny little sliver, and then, you know, there's us, Charlie.
Pardon me?
I said there's us.
Yeah. Yeah, and
we do understand, you know, we do know what the fight is.
Well, you got to remember, I was born and raised in East Tennessee, right near the border of North Carolina, and, you know, there's a lot of people that are of Cherokee ancestry back in the town that I was from.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. The people who had to hide out and refused to leave under pain of death from General Jackson.
Yeah.
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 And there's also, for instance, I mean, I don't know if you know this as a proud son of Tennessee. But the word Tennessee comes from a Cherokee village on the banks of the river in East Tennessee. I think the word roughly was Tenasi.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's underwater now. It was flooded by the TVA.
Yeah.
The place where, in many senses, the American Revolution was born. It was called the Washington Association. Is underwater. That was a case in which people, indigenous white folks, black folks, were driven off the land in order to flood it and create a reservoir for the generation of power through the Tennessee Valley Authority.
Right. Yeah, I know. You know, we've had quite a few pollution disasters too. Like down at Watts Bar, where they generate power using coal, and the coal sludge gets loose and contaminates the water.
Well, what was that? The Clinch River.
Yeah.
There was a tributary of that, and ashbergs floated down into the Tennessee River and ruined vast stretches of land. The Tennessee Valley Authority is still trying to deal with it and largely running away from it. They took the poisonous coal ash and shipped it to Union, Alabama, Perry County, where poor people now are being poisoned because the Perry County commissioners accepted that filth into a landfill that was not prepared for it. And, of course, the poison leached into the groundwater.
Well, what I can't understand, and, you know, you may think this is silly, but what I can't understand is we got so far in solar technology, and we learned how to get more voltage output and more current output out of solar cells. And then we just stopped.
Well, we let somebody, some other country, pick up the technology and run with it. That's why China outproduces the United States in solar infrastructure and wind turbine infrastructure. See, Sparky, I said wind turbine, not windmill. Sorry, that was an aside. by orders of magnitude. Because there was no the hydrocarbon industry made damn sure that there was no market for it.
Well, I don't know. Every time, you know, people are pushing electric vehicles, but electric vehicles, all they are is a store of energy. I mean, the energy has to come from somewhere, and it's not coming from solar, so it's probably coming from fossil fuels. Or nuclear reactions.
Right, but yeah, Charlie, I agree, and that is a concern. But the fact of the matter is, it is possible to entirely fuel your solar car or your EV, your electric vehicle, from solar energy. I mean, we've got a buddy down in Florida whose Nissan Leaf was entirely solar fueled. That's not a big hurdle to jump, but there are larger questions, and the renewable sustainable energy sector is a big one. You know, here in West Virginia, there's coal mining in Northeast Tennessee and Southwest Virginia and Eastern Kentucky too. Those are the mountaintop removal states. But you've got, in West Virginia in particular, you got a bunch of coal miners who are out of work. And
yeah.
I think it's fitting and proper on Labor Day to consider how we deal with some of that. You know, there was no Labor Day back when the buggy whip manufacturers and the buggy whip leather braiders and the tanners were going out of business with the rise of the newfangled automobile. But
well, really, all you have to... I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to wrap up or finish, or but you've got out of work miners, and there's a difference, Charlie, between an out of work miner who's 57 years old and an out of work miner who's 29. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
that 57-year-old miner needs wage support until he gets old enough for his pension, well, if it exists, and a whole lot of non-union miners' pensions don't, and they got nobody to fight for him because they got erased in bankruptcy, but he needs wage support until he gets old enough to draw Social Security. The 29-year-old miner needs to learn how to not be a miner anymore. And most of the people who are out-of-work miners in West Virginia, they don't want to go somewhere else. And I owe, among other things, I owe a note to our buddy Tom in California on this very topic. And I might even try to address it here in a couple of minutes, but they don't want to leave West Virginia. So we've so if that's the case and we want them to stay here, then we've got to create some kind of industry that they can do. Now, there's, for instance, there is tons, I mean, the vast amounts of high-voltage electricity required inside an underground coal mine. And you need some on a mountaintop removal site, too.
Yeah.
So that's, and that's very definitely a skill. And one would think that something like that would be a skill that would be transferable to, say, wind turbine construction or the building of the building of solar farms. And that kind of construction and maintenance can provide lifetime employment. But are we talking about it here? Hell no.
No.
No, we're talking about if we can just get that one out of our White House and his job-killing EPA, we'll mine coal like we never mined it before.
Yeah.
Which, of course, we won't.
Well, really, all you got to do is go down toward Marshtown, Tennessee, and head up 25E over, and you know the where the three states come together there: Kentucky and Tennessee and Virginia. And there's a lot of mountaintop removal and strip mining and everything. And basically, I don't think what people understand is what happens is they'll go in and they'll strip the coal out, and then they'll replace the soil. And then they'll plant a bunch of softwood trees on it, like pine and stuff like that, and they say it's been reclaimed. And
well,
it has.
Yeah, and they try that crap here, too. But as my dear friend and hero, Judy Bonds, once told a coal company executive, hell, I can grow an oak tree for 10 years in a plastic bucket. And it's true. And then they die because they got to go, the taproot's got to go somewhere. And you know, you can try to replant a mountaintop removal site, but it's not going to be successful because, for starters, there's no water table; it's gone.
Yep.
And so it can sink a taproot to the center of the earth, but it's not going to find any water because it's gone. And there's no soil to speak of. It takes 1,000 years to make an inch of topsoil in Appalachia.
Well, I think they import their topsoil, and I don't know, you know, even if they put down a half an inch or not.
Oh, they don't even do that. They don't import topsoil. That costs money. What they do is they bring in this stuff, and you've probably seen it. It looks like green paint. It's called hydro seed.
Uh-huh.
And it's a non-native grass, and it's kind of like a chia. You know, you remember chia pets?
Yeah.
Well, we have chia mountains. And you can spray this stuff on a rock, and it'll grow, and it'll be green. But it's not going to go anywhere. It's not going to break down because it's all stone. I mean, any dirt they put back is dirt that they, you know, dirt they found on the site. They just shove it around. There's no truckloads of topsoil coming in.
I don't know. It just, you know, like I say, everybody needs to go up to Pound, Virginia, or somewhere like that, and just take a look around.
Oh God, why? Yeah, the entirety of, I mean, more than half of Wise County, Virginia, is just gone. It's and you can drive around and see it, and it's otherwise a beautiful little community. Do you know where Big Stone Gap is?
Uh Oh, yeah, sure. That's right up above Gate City, isn't it?
Yeah. And yeah. And Big Stone Gap is Wise County, Virginia. And there's a little community there right before you go up the mountain to go across into Harlan County, Kentucky, called Appalachia, Virginia.
Uh-huh.
And that's where a coal company rolled a boulder down onto a four-year-old boy as he lay sleeping in his crib and killed him deader than Pharaoh's cat. And the state of Virginia, the Commonwealth, I'm sorry, of Virginia, fined the coal company $20,000.
Yeah, it's sad. I mean, and you know, basically, I guess the people are really, if you want to just come right down and say it, the people in that area of the country are getting screwed, and they don't know they're getting screwed.
Oh, I think in our hearts we do, but we just don't see any. We are so inured to it, Charlie. We don't see any alternative but to be screwed.
Yeah.
Not to make any unfair comparison or to in any wise be dismissive of sex workers. A prostitute expects, by dint of her occupation, to have sex with some pretty nasty, skeevy men. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Well, that's West Virginia. We've been prostituted to some really nasty, skeevy outfits, and that's what we figure our lot in life is.
Well, I guess, you know...
And it will take... Charlie, it's going to take a complete turnaround of mindset to get away from that. People in Appalachia have got to learn and be taught that there is a better way.
And what scares me about mines, and maybe I'm ignorant, and maybe I shouldn't even think about this, but if you look at down in Florida, they've started pumping the underground water out, and whenever they start pumping underground water out, things start caving in, and they have sinkholes.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I just wonder if that's going to happen whenever they start mining, you know, whenever they, you know, start pulling pillars in these mines and all these mines.
Oh, no, we have something similar but yet different. We have something, Charlie, called blowouts.
Uh-huh.
And so what happens is when you underground, and West Virginia is so underground mined, so hollowed out that the state doesn't even know where all the mines are. Because in the heyday of wild-eyed predatory capitalism, if you had the money and the men to do it, you just opened you up a mine and started digging coal.
Yeah.
And you dug it till it played out. And we got no, and then the mine, once you close the mine fills up with water. I can take you to any number of places around here and show you where poison water is still draining out of mines that have been closed for 100 years. Because the mountain is full of it now.
I guess that's plenty deep enough to get into the water table, isn't it?
Oh, hell yes. But what happens is, you know, coal and water are inextricably linked.
Yeah.
Where you find coal, there's going to be water. Because you're going so deep into the earth. And it's so damn sad because the water in Appalachia used to be beautiful. I mean, this was one of the most well-watered places in the United States. Now the vast majority of it is poisonous. But what happens is when they hollow out these mountains, you know, they do leave the pillars behind. And it fills up and fills up and fills up and fills up with water. And if you add mountaintop removal into the mix, and sometimes even when you don't, then you've got pressure on the top of the mountain or where they do a sludge impoundment, a toxic waste impoundment. of multiple billions of gallons of toxic waste, that stuff is sitting on old mines that are already full of water. So the combined effect of the water pressing down and the water pressing out, you get a blowout. The best example is, what, 2001, Martin County, Kentucky. And billions of gallons of toxic waste blew out of a mountain. A site that was operated, of course, by Massey Energy and Don Blankenship, for which he was never charged with any crime. And you know, luckily there was no loss of life. But there has been before. 1972, the collapse of a sludge dam in West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And so our remedy to that was to say, well, you know, don't build those sludge dams, Buffalo Creek, don't build those sludge dams so they'll just hold a few million gallons. Build your sludge dams so they'll hold billions of gallons. And the largest dam on Earth, and people have heard me say this before, but it bears repeating, the largest dam on Earth, well, in the Western Hemisphere, sits in western Raleigh County, West Virginia. It's bigger than the Hoover Dam. And it holds, it's rated to hold back 9.8 billion gallons of toxic waste behind a dirt dam, a dam made of dirt and rocks. And it sits on top of an old coal mine that they know about that is full to busting with water. And one of these days, the whole damn thing is going to go. And they estimate that the wall of water that runs down the Coal River Valley will be between 45 and 60 feet high. And it'll run near 100 miles.
So it'll probably get down into Virginia and northern Tennessee.
It'll go down toward the Kanawha Valley. It'll go down the course of the Coal River, which empties into the Kanawha at St. Albans, West Virginia, which is west of Charleston.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I remember I was driving up to Washington, D.C. one time to interview for a job with Wayne Laboratories. Of course, they're defunct now. But I remember I got turned the wrong way on an interstate, and I went through something called Big Walker Mountain or something like that.
That's I-77, the Big Walker Mountain Tunnel. There's a turnaround right there at Withville, where you gotta go off and go down one way for a while, and then you gotta jump off. I've done it a million times, and I've gotten screwed up there too. But the next thing you know, you're on 77 northbound. And you're going, you go through two tunnels, and then bang, you're in West Virginia.
Yeah.
And you look up and go, hell, I ain't supposed to be here.
Yeah.
Now, the nice thing is you can go on up to Beckley and get on 64 and go across and then get on 81 and go on up. But that's a big old triangle, and you just wasted a lot of miles.
Yeah. I'd like to get back over to East Tennessee, Northeast Tennessee, but there's just no economy over there right now.
No, but it is beautiful country. It is absolutely beautiful country. And, of course, they make my favorite bacon in the world over there at Madisonville.
Yeah.
You know, Benton's. And damn, the ham's good, too. Had to get a little food porn in this evening, Charlie.
Yeah, most of the time I eat at the place called Bojangles.
Oh, we got a brand new one here. Man, you can't get near the place.
And yeah, I usually get green beans and mashed taters and chicken.
Well, I'd have far preferred to have had a Popeyes, because you can't get the Popeyes. At least you can still get the chicken. Last I checked, you know, good and spicy. It's all just one kind It's all just one kind of chicken at Bojangles now. It used to be you could get spicy there too.
Yeah.
And of course. Of course, I live in perpetual envy of you, Charlie, because you live within striking distance of Prince's there in Nashville. You ever eat there?
Striking distance of what now? I'm sorry.
Prince's Hot Chicken.
Where is that at?
Oh, God. I mean, it's kind of... there's two or three other restaurants now that have sprung up. I don't know it well enough to tell you where it is, but if you look it up, you can find it. And it is the it is hot and wonderful. I mean, spicy.
Yeah.
And the tourists will come in and say, "I want the extra hot," and they'll look at you and go, "No, you don't." And according to some accounts, pregnant women walking in have been told, "No, honey, you can't have this until after the baby's born. This could put you into labor." But oh, it's good. Mercy, it's good. Prince's, Prince apostrophe S. You just look it up. I'm sitting here beginning my mouth beginning to water now.
Every time I drive down Interstate 40 and I see one of these little Shell gas stations with the Hunt Brothers pizza, I always start laughing, think about what you said.
Oh, God Almighty. Yep, gas station pizza. and it comes to them, the crust is ready. It's a frozen pizza. The crust with a little bit of sauce and some cheese already on it, and then they throw all the fresh fixings on it and run it through the conveyor belt oven. I can't stand their regular crust. The crust on it's like a baseball glove, Charlie. The only way I can stand it is to get their thin crust, the square pizza, and that's not so terrible.
Yeah.
But I was told the other day up to the gas station that they're going to get rid of it. And they're gonna,
oh, really?
Yeah, they're gonna get rid of my Hunt Brothers pizza, and they're gonna replace it with a big old walk-in beer cooler because, you know, we need another gas station selling beer. And if I thought for a minute that they were gonna bring in any decent beer, I'd say, well, good on you. But it's just gonna be extra room for more Busch and Bud Light and Bud and Miller Light and, you know, piss.
Yeah. Down here in Tennessee, they just started selling wine at Kroger's. I think it was the 1st of July they started. And so what I was going to do is I was going to walk in and say, okay, where's the Wild Irish Rose or the Boone's Farm?
Oh, they'll have it for you. Kroger meets all needs, Charlie.
Oh, well, I'll get off here and let somebody else talk. I appreciate the conversation and appreciate you holding your Labor Day show. I was surprised at some of the topics you covered today. You did a good job.
Well, I thank you. I just wanted to I wanted to kind of tie some things together because I think there's more to reverencing labor than, you know, putting a woman putting away her white clothing till Easter or going out and looking at new cars for the big Labor Day blowout sale. But
yeah.
That's me.
Okie doke. Well, I'll catch you later.
All right. You take care, Charlie.
Uh-huh.
Bye now. Our buddy Charlie down in Tennistan. All right, then. It's about 8, it's 8:33, and I just realized something. I'm a bad father. I'm a real bad father. One of the things that happens when you work for a certain retail outfit is that one day you might work 8 to 4, and the next day you might work 2 to 10. And the day after that, you might work noon to 9. I'm sorry, 9 hours, not 8. So you'd work 8 to 5, noon to 9, 2 to 11. I just realized Margie worked 11 to 8 today. That means she's been off work for 34 minutes. That means she's sitting around waiting for Daddy to come and get her. So that being the case, I'm going to bail out now. And, well, fact of the matter is I'm thinking about a little gas station pizza, too. No, I'm not. I'm kidding. Shit makes my liver quiver. But I do need to go get Margie. It would be awfully nice if we did not begin Titanic Tuesday tomorrow with $420 to raise. But that's where we stand. If anybody wants to take that down a notch, it is massively appreciated. So, I will bid you a fond farewell and get my tardy butt on the road. I hope you enjoyed having a little live program for Labor Day. It would have started about 26 minutes earlier, but for a recalcitrant computer. Y'all take care. Think about what Labor Day means. And thank you all for sharing your precious finite time in this little conversation. It is what makes it all worthwhile. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.